from WBUR Boston. I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. The internet changes everything, they say, including labor. In recent years, a raft of new websites have started connecting people hungry for work with tasks that need doing. Not full-time jobs, but work in pieces, and you bid to get that work. Walk my dog, clean my basement, design my web page. Bid low enough, and the work is yours. This hour On Point, micro-tasking, micro-labor, and the new world of wages and work. Joining me first today from New York is Scott Kersner. He writes the Innovation Economy column and blog for the Boston Globe and Boston.com. He's author of Fans, Friends, and Followers, Building an Audience and a Creative Career in the Digital Age. Scott, thanks very much for joining us.
Thanks for inviting me.
So this isn't brand new, but it seems to really be taking off. There are now lots of these sites where you can get all kinds of work, and many of them structured around bidding for that work. What's the range? How do they tend to work, Scott?
Well, I think, you know, when the internet came along in the late 90s, you had phase one of this kind of outsourcing or job bidding. And, you know, it was mostly, you know, people to design a website or do some programming for your company. Mm-hmm. And that I think they tended to be bigger jobs. They were a few hundred dollars. They were maybe a few thousand dollars. You had sites like Guru.net and Elance popping up. But now we're into phase two, and what got me really interested in phase two is that we're talking about farming out jobs globally that you might be paying a penny or 5 cents or a dollar for. And, you know, once you broke that price barrier of, you know, hey, we want you to spend a few minutes or an hour doing some work and we're going to give you a quarter, you know, that really caught my attention.
So, I mean, there are all kinds of things going on here, and we'll look at the range of things. But what kind of work is available on the web that people are tasked, that people are willing to do for a penny or 5 cents? Like what?
Well, you know, I wanted to check it out. So I signed up for this website called Mechanical Turk, which is run by Amazon. And the name comes from there was a famous chess playing automaton, I think, in the 19th century called the Mechanical Turk.
Okay, cool.
That seemed to play chess, but actually had a human being hidden that was moving the,
right.
the chess pieces.
Okay.
And so what Mechanical Turk is you sign up on the website, you set up a payment account so that Amazon can forward money to your bank account, and then you start shopping for jobs. One of the jobs I saw was, you know, I'm a writer for the Boston Globe,
okay.
and one of the jobs was write an interesting, thoughtful, 1,000-word article, and we'll pay you $2 for that. And I thought, well, gee, that sounds a lot like what I do for a living, but at a radically reduced pay rate. Other things are more fun. It's like look at historical photos from a photo archive mm-hmm. and tell us who's in the photo or what's going on, or maybe correct some labels that someone else has put on the photo. And
mm-hmm.
and that one I was paid 5 cents for looking at 4 cents for looking at five pictures. But that was kind of entertaining. And then the other one that I didn't do, I was like, who would do this, was transcribing the audio of a 70-minute gastroenterology lecture. And that paid $2.85. And anyone who's done some transcribing of audio knows that would probably take you three-ish hours to do, and you'd earn $2.85.
Right. I mean, so that's an interesting array of kinds of work and some very low pay. Now, we'll look at things that are definitely being done by Americans. But who's doing this? Is at that kind of pay rate, is this largely being done by people offshore? Or English speakers around the world who say, fine, 5 cents is good in India or wherever they are?
I think it's completely global. It's any country. I don't know the whole list of countries where Amazon will send money to your bank account. You know, maybe you can't do it from Nigeria for some reason. But, you know, pretty much any country where you can have a bank account and get money wired into it, I think Amazon is okay with that. I think, you know, from blogs that I've seen of people who do this, who call themselves Turkers, they do work on Mechanical Turk. You know, it may be a lot of college students. It may be people who have part-time jobs. It may be people sitting at home in the evening watching reality TV and, you know, categorizing photos or, you know, looking at people's LinkedIn profiles and deciding what kind of, you know, what trade they're in, what profession they're in.
Now, that's you're talking about things where here's a price, you do this for 5 cents and you know, 5 cents times as many times as you do it. There are also a lot that now have bidding, and those work in different ways. I mean, you look down, there's so many sites now, Fiverr, you know, the things you're willing to do for $5 or $10. What will you do for $10? But then there are the bidding sites. We're going to talk with the founder of one in a moment. But there's a lot of them now. You know, there's Zardly, there's TaskRabbit, where I can put – and I first heard about this at the gym. A couple of guys were talking. The guy wanted a bunch of heavy stuff, moved out of his basement. He said, I found this amazing site. I just say, you know, here's what I want done. And then people bid on it. And he was marveling at how low people were bidding to do this pretty difficult work. But it's an auction. You bid to get that work, and you better bid low.
The TaskRabbit is the one that I've followed because it's a company that started in Boston. And I think one of their really popular tasks in the early days was, I've got some junk sitting in my basement, and would you take it to Goodwill or would you take it to the Salvation Army for mm-hmm. me? And you might say, all right, to me that task is worth $15 or $20, but the people on the TaskRabbit site who've signed up to be runners or TaskRabbits, they might bid $10. You know, maybe I'm already going to Salvation Army. Right. I'll do it for $5. Mm-hmm. So that it does create this very competitive dynamic. One TaskRabbit I talked to said that your feedback rating or your star rating can sometimes help you if you bid a higher price than somebody else. Because maybe it's a job. This was a guy who does handyman work. You know, if you want someone to come in and paint your bedroom, you don't want a 3-star person doing that. Mm-hmm. You want a 5-star person doing that.
Right.
And so he felt safe in not being the lowest bidder because he has, you know, accumulated good feedback.
So depending on the kind of job and how much you care about the care with which it is done, you may be willing to pay a little more for somebody with a better rating to get it done. On the other hand, if it's just moving junk, you may just want the lowest bidder, and you can find that as well. Scott Kersner with the Boston Globe, please stand by there in New York. I want to welcome to our conversation from Washington, Eric Custer. He is founder and chief operating officer of Zarly. This is another one of these places that people can bid for goods and services. We're looking at services particularly today. Mobile startup. It's really focused on a mobile representation of this. Eric Custer, thanks very much for being with us.
Hi, John. Thanks for having me.
So what kind of work are people trying to get done via Zarly? What are they posting?
Yeah, so I think the amazing thing for us, having started this just under a year ago, is the diversity of things. So I think, you know, as you said, we see some things like walk my dog or pick up my laundry, but a lot more of it are these kind of these jobs that require someone skilled. Like, I'm heading on a trip this summer to Spain, and I need someone who can tutor me for several hours a week.
Mm-hmm.
I need someone to help me get in shape. I need a nutritionist, or those kind of professional skills, I think, that are required that are difficult to find. You know, we kind of look at markets that are very opaque, that right now there's a local need for it, but it's hard to find those kind of ones. So we see really a lot of diversity, from helping get in shape, help around the house, help around the office, or really kind of those really odd things. We saw someone who lost a set of keys in a sewer grate, and actually asked for someone to bring a fishing pole and help them fish their keys out of the sewer grate. So you see kind of the spectrum be very wide and broad.
So how much would how little would you require to go and fish my keys out of the sewer for me? A lot of things start small but get very big. You've got obviously people who think this could get big. You've got Kleiner Perkins, a big venture capital outfit behind you. You've got Meg Whitman, one of the founders of eBay, on your board. Ashton Kutcher is in there. I mean, what scale could this go to? How big could this kind of operation become, Eric?
Yeah, I mean, we think it's very exciting, obviously, and we're excited about the space. I mean, I think the Bureau of Labor has said that the kind of the freelance economy, which is, I think, what this is really tapping into, is nearly a $500 billion market in the U.S. So I think it's a huge market. And I think really what it is kind of, as was alluded to, that there is kind of a transition from kind of web 1.0 to really like mobile social web 2.0 or 3.0, whatever you want to call it. And I think what that is really starting to add more transparency, add better communication and trust really to a broader, this broader local set of markets. So I think that's what we're seeing, is that it's really growing fast. And I think this opportunity here is big. There has not really been this light shone on kind of this opaque market, which is local services that you need in-person help on. And that's, I think, why we're excited about it.
Freelance help. You say $500 billion. Presumably more and more Americans are doing this kind of work. I mean, what percentage of American work do you think might be done this way? Freelancers sort of bidding online and heading out to do those tasks.
Yeah, so I think that fortunately we have some pretty good data behind it. About 1 in 10 workers in America now are working for a company but are not employed by that company, so the definition of freelance. So I think it's becoming very, very, very prevalent, and I think we're seeing it grow rapidly. I think we're, you know, expectations in various fields, from some of the technology fields to even more of the design and creative fields, are seeing growth rates in 15% to 20% over the next 5 to 10 years. So I think that it's growing rapidly, and I think really the important thing that is about it is, you know, not necessarily as was alluded to about price all the time, but it is about kind of awareness and communication. So I think what we see is that it's not always the lowest bid, but it's about having the opportunity to kind of have the most number of people see this and choice for consumers. So ultimately, this kind of micro labor economy or freelance economy is really about providing more choices to the end user consumer, who then I think has better choices across the board.
How is it for the worker? I mean, presumably this is not a full-time job, obviously. They don't have health care. Many people are seeing a kind of race for the bottom in pay here. What's in it for the worker?
You know, I think it's been interesting so far. We talked to a lot of our users, and I think what surprised me the most is why these individuals do it. A lot of them have other full-time work, or they do have their own company. We see a huge number of our users and kind of the sellers on this in this economy, I guess, are actually owners of small businesses themselves. And this is just a way to get more leads. But really, the thing that they kept saying over and over again, the reason they do it is for the adventure part of it. It surprised me a little bit, too. But they're really looking at this as an opportunity to meet someone new, do something kind of out of the ordinary, and kind of get out of the rut a little bit. I mean, I think this gives you the opportunity. You have choice as the kind of the end user on this one to say, this is something I want to do or this is something I don't want to do.
And this is a price I'll do it at. Eric Custer with Zaarly, Chief Marketing Officer there and founder. Good luck, Eric, and thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you, too.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about a new breed of websites where you bid for work. Low bidder wins, usually. Micro tasks, micro labor, it's being called, where you can hire anybody, anytime, to do almost anything at your price or their price. A world where everybody may bid for work, and what that means we're looking at today for labor and wages and the economy we live in. It's got an interesting response, all kinds of responses here online, but, let's see, what do we got? Here's one from Greg, says, I think it's fine. One person wants something done, another wants to do something. There's no fuss about minimum wage, OSHA, sexual harassment, drug test, diversity, or government compliance. What's not to like? The other side of it, Lulu says, can't help but be reminded of those terrible scenes in The Grapes of Wrath, starving Okies in horrible conditions, no choice but to accept pennies for work that months earlier might have earned them dollars because desperation's driven them to it. And here's another one from Toy says, is this the internet version of the Hunger Games? Okay, I don't know. What about labor law and wages? Does minimum wage, for example, apply here, Scott, or not?
You know, minimum wage doesn't apply when someone's an independent contractor. If you hire someone to do some task that you're outsourcing at work, maybe they're going to build a new website for you. However many hours that takes them, you are allowed to say, I'm going to pay you $500 for that project, and it could take them 500 hours to do that. It's interesting. I do think at some point we're going to see state attorneys general or Department of Labor or just sort of worker lawsuits around whether these people really are independent contractors. I'm told in Massachusetts the test, there's sort of a three-part test, which is an independent contractor is free from the direction of the employer and control of the employer. They're doing work that's outside of the work that the employer usually does. And finally, this worker kind of customarily does this sort of thing. So you can imagine having someone come into your office to install a Wi-Fi network might be an independent contractor. You know, you're not in the business of setting up Wi-Fi networks.
Right,
you're not telling them how to do the job. But, you know, when I was looking at pictures, these historic pictures on Amazon Mechanical Turk, that probably was the company's business. They probably are building a photo archive that they want to have accurately described. They were telling me, directing me how to do the job. And I don't customarily engage in that sort of work. You know, I'm a journalist, not a photo librarian, photo archiver. So I think you could see some lawsuits.
I mean, a lot of times
these people are contractors.
Independent contractor, if you're bringing them in to do something special. You want them to come in and assemble your IKEA, office furniture. That's not the business you're in. But it does look like some businesses are kind of farming out work that they might have otherwise had employees doing, but
they
they can farm it out as it rises and falls seasonally or demand-wise.
Yeah, I think you hear a lot of startups, you know, they might be a startup in New York City that's trying to build a database of restaurants. And so you could use one of these websites to say, I want you to go visit every restaurant in New York City. I'll pay you 50 cents per restaurant and get me the menu, you know, from each restaurant, or tell me what genre of food they serve. And that might be very essential to what the business is doing. They're trying to build some kind of, you know, online database of, you know, every dish served in New York City. And for them, it's a much cheaper way. You don't have to hire 5 or 10 junior level employees or 5 or 10 interns to do that. You can farm it out online.
Our listener, Mike in Pennsylvania, asks, how do these sites earn a profit? Do they take a cut, or how does it work?
They're like an old-fashioned agent. You know, they're like a temp agency or a Hollywood agent, and they take anywhere from 4% of the amount that the worker gets before it gets to the worker, all the way up to 50%. And interestingly, some of the workers on TaskRabbit, for example, the errand runners on that site, don't really know how much is being added. You know, I think the site may not want them to know, hey, you might be doing a $20 task and we're adding $10 on top of that task. So there's a little bit of opacity there in terms of how much the site is adding to each job.
Now, people doing this work, TaskRabbit you mentioned, for example, I mean, and you can post any kind of job, really almost anything there that you want done, and the people will bid for it. But who are these people? TaskRabbit says they screen them. They do federal criminal background checks and more than that. Are these screened workers, or are you going to be inviting, you know, who knows who into your house?
Well, I think the appeal of websites like TaskRabbit is that the people on them are much more screened than, say, someone on Craigslist who says, hey, I'm a handyman. I'll come, you know, if you have plumbing tasks to do, I'll show up at your house, and you don't know who that person is. So TaskRabbit does do a higher level of screening than that. I talked to two TaskRabbits who work in the Boston area. One had been in the construction union in Cambridge, and he was a union mason and got, you know, work sort of vanished in the last recession. Mm-hmm. And so he's now doing handyman work on TaskRabbit. He told me he's making about $500 a week through the website, which to him, on top of his other handyman work, I think is providing him a decent living. But he did complain to me that, look, there's no health insurance, there's no retirement program with TaskRabbit, so I don't have any of the safety net that I used to have when I was in the union. But another woman was an older woman in New Hampshire who, you know, uses TaskRabbit to kind of supplement other work that she does that's kind of seasonal, or I think she sells concessions or souvenirs at the Patriots, you know, NFL games. And she didn't seem to have any complaints. She liked, you know, she liked the adventure. She liked the fun of having a different job to do every day.
Of course, classified ads for work have been around forever, and Craigslist has had them for a long time. But you talked with an economist at MIT, Ofer Sharon, there, who said that the structure of these, a lot of these new ones, like TaskRabbit, he said, invites a bidding war among service providers. They're really set up for people to outbid one another lower and lower.
Well, and one model that we haven't talked about, Tom, is a website like 99designs. And that's a site that a lot of companies, you know, startup early stage companies will use to get a logo made or maybe a website built or a T-shirt designed or some kind of promotional material. And the idea there is you say how much you're willing to pay. I'll pay $500 for a logo that I like. And designers design the logo for you. So they're doing work for free in hopes that you'll pick their logo. So it's you know, digital spec work, basically, and you might get to look at 20 or 40 or 50 logos that have been designed for your company, and you say, all right, my $400 goes to logo number 43, and the other guys, you know, have spent 3 hours doing your logo, and they get nothing.
And we heard there from the founder of Zaarly, one of the big ones. They've got Meg Whitman on their board. They've got millions behind them. I mean, they're really looking at biting into a significant portion of the American labor market with this, bringing it into their world. We're going to talk with economist Harley Shaken about that in just a minute from California. Scott Kersner, we've got callers. Let's go to them. David in Savannah, Georgia. David, thanks for calling. You're on the air. What do you think?
Yes, hello.
Hi. What do you think about it all, David?
I think it's great.
Have you done the work? Have you used this kind of work? What's your experience?
Well, I own several rentals in Savannah, and I also own a 110-year-old house that I do a lot of work on, and I do some handyman work on the side. And I found that, for example, a couple of weeks ago, I sodded my backyard, and I had a pallet of sod in the back of my truck.
Yep.
And I drove over to the corner where they're giving out free breakfasts for homeless people, and asked two people if they would like to come for $8 an hour and help me lay sod. And they said no. And then I went and put an ad on Craigslist, the same ad, said I need somebody for a day at $8 an hour to help me lay sod, and within an hour, I've got 6 or 7 replies.
So for you, it's working. You get low-cost labor, and you get access to a lot of it because they can see what you're offering online.
Yes, and I find that the level of work is better a lot of times than if I find somebody from a different method, especially for like painting and semi-skilled labor that I just don't want to do.
And it's easier than going to a homeless shelter to find somebody to do it, I suppose. You just click on the keyboard. David, let us hold that thought right there, and I appreciate your call. Let's go to Berkeley, California, and Harley Shaken, professor at UC Berkeley, specializes in labor and the global economy. Harley Shaken, thanks very much for joining us.
Very nice to be here.
So there's our world. David in Savannah has rental property in an old house. He needs lots of handyman work done. This is great for him. It's convenient. He can put up the thing on, you know, will you lay sod in my backyard for $8 an hour? And he can see who will do it. And if he gets on one of these new sites, there might even be somebody who's willing to do it for less than $8 an hour, Harley. And he's delighted.
Well, there are a lot of appealing things for that are out there with this new approach. David points out one of them that's clearly appealing to him. But there's also a downside here that I think we have to absolutely recognize. And the downside is that you are looking at a system that really does push us in the direction of the lowest bidder. And that sometimes can throw out the last 100 years of standards and protections that workers have received either through what the state does or the federal government or labor unions. So the danger here is that you have not simply workers each standing alone for an employer, but competing against each other with few protections. And I think that's something we also have to come to terms with.
I mean, as you sit and listen to how these things work and people's experience with them, you see the ambitions of the people starting these companies. You know that when you've got Kleiner Perkins putting in millions and getting Meg Whitman on the board, they're looking for large-scale application of this. I mean, could we see our economy flip so that, a really significant portion of Americans find work this way, and maybe not as full-time jobs, but as lots of bits and pieces that they bid for, put together online, and that's their living, Harley?
Well, I think that's one of the key dangers, in fact, that we face here. We're not really talking about an innovative niche startup on the internet. We're talking about sites like this, should they grow in the way that a Meg Whitman or a Kleiner Perkins would like to see them grow, could set the standards for the entire labor market. So the wages that a union mason pays won't simply be set for the internet work, but they would be set for construction sites where the standards are set on the web. And then the other dimension of this is we're looking at a global labor market where the lowest standards can be very low if they're set globally, absent any regulation or absent any ability of workers to set the standards together versus competing against one another. So what we're looking at on the net today could be a much broader standard for people in ordinary, regular, everyday jobs tomorrow. And we have to ask, is this really the way we would like to see labor standards defined going forward?
Of course, there may be few of those regular, ordinary jobs if everything can be broken up into tasks and put out for bid. Glenn in Guilford, Connecticut. Glenn, you're on the air. Thanks for calling.
Thank you, Tom. My concern would be liability. I mean, there was always those fellows that would go around, I'll clean your gutters out for you.
Yep.
And it was my understanding that if they're on your property and they get electrocuted or fall off the ladder, that your homeowner's insurance, because you contracted them, would not cover them. And that you would be liable for their injuries, and if they were cleaning your basement out and they had an old thermometer, let's say, and they went to the dump and they threw it in the dump, and only to find out that your name is on some of those things and you've just disposed of mercury in the dump.
Yep.
I can see some liability issues with that as well. That's what would concern me.
Glenn, let us pick it up. Scott Kirzner, do you know how liability works in these cases where you hire somebody off the web? They bid on the job, they're in your house, and now down the stairs they go.
I don't know if some of the companies that run these marketplaces are covering liability insurance. You know, your dog gets run over when someone from TaskRabbit is walking the dog, and is there any recompense? I do think it's interesting. You know, we may see another test of these websites. When people ask, ask a worker to do something that's illegal, you know, hey, I left a suitcase at my hotel in Toronto. Could you bring it to me in Detroit?
Yeah,
and,
yeah.
Don't worry about what's in the suitcase. So I think there are still a lot of questions around how micro labor is going to work. And also, these workers, how are we going to encourage them to save for retirement? Are we going to do anything about the self-employment tax that, independent contractors and freelancers get to pay because they don't have a traditional employer? Will these companies, whether it's Elance or Odesk or Guru, will these companies, if someone really is earning $30,000, $40,000 a year through their website, is that person going to have to pay their own self-employment tax, or will the company pay it?
And how do they save for retirement? Let's say Lynn writes to us online that she's used the site Fiverr a bunch of times for work, and that's the one that says, what would you do for $5? She says, but I do wonder why/how people do this service, this work, for so cheap. Could be a little hard to save for that retirement on some of the kinds of pay that we're seeing here. My ear's calling from West Palm Beach, Florida. My ear, thanks for calling. You're on the air. Oh, looks like we lost my ear. Let's go to Brooks in Boston. Brooks, thank you for calling. You're on.
Hey, how you doing?
I'm all right.
I'm a carpenter, remodeler, pretty much all aspects of home remodeling.
Mm-hmm.
And I think these sites, at first blush, they're great. But people really have to understand you do get what you pay for. And even something as simple as painting a room, and you figure I could pay someone, $15 an hour to paint a room.
Mm-hmm.
If you've ever seen a room that's painted poorly, I mean, at the end of the day, you're gonna get what you pay for. And I, like the other caller mentioned, liability. I mean, if someone does come on your property and hurts themselves or damages your property, micro labor sounds great, but I don't think you're really going to have any recourse.
Brooks, I know what you mean, but as a skilled laborer, are you thinking this could cut into your available work anyway? Even if it's not as good, if people are bidding for it out there and they're bidding down, that's a powerful allure.
Well, I do know people that feel that, for example, Craigslist can be a threat if you're an electrician or a carpenter or a tile worker or something like that. But I think even going the next step further, we're saying you're going to have TaskRabbit. People are going to bid lower. I feel I do a high enough quality of work that if those are the customers I'm losing, I wouldn't worry too much about it.
Yeah, Brooks, we wish you good luck, and we hope that works out. And I thank you for your call. And, of course, Scott, for a lot of things, not painting rooms, but many things, you're bidding against people who are overseas where the cost of living is lower. Sam writes here, it's not just about Americans bidding lower. The competition from overseas pushes prices even lower. How can we compete? This is part of the outsourcing wave, micro job by micro job, Scott.
It is, and that's why it's so difficult to think, well, what do you do about it? If you want to try to slow the tide, or if you want to try to legislate or just create some protections for the workers, a person who's in the Ukraine who's designing a website has a very different cost of living than a person in Midtown Manhattan who designs a website. And similarly, the college kid who's on Mechanical Turk earning $5 extra every night, while they're watching TV or hanging out with their friends is very different from the person who's trying to make a living and make a mortgage payment. So, all of those people are in this micro labor economy, and it's hard to imagine, well, how could they ever unionize? How could they ever get together to say, hey, this is what we want? And how could you create some protections or some standards that would apply to all those different people?
Lots of response here online, Scott. Harley or Kelly says, I work as much as possible doing these jobs. My particular specialty is testing brand names. How do I feel? What connotations does a new product name elicit? It pays okay for the difficulty of the task, and I get paid through PayPal. Easy money, Kelly says. On the other hand, here's Judy. She says, I've been self-employed for most of the last 17 years. Closed my business in 2010. Was looking for work. Couldn't find it. Tried some of these sites. Thought it might be a good way to earn some money, have some flexibility with her working time. She writes, I was horrified to see the extremely low level of pay for most of the tasks. John writes, Foxconn has better benefits and pays more. Patrick writes, this is something that teens, college students would use to save up and go on road trips for spring break. This should not be a solution for an adult with more responsibilities, debt, and a family to feed? Well, we'll see. 800-423-8255 is our number. 800-423-TALK. Let's go to Louie in Lunenburg, Massachusetts. Louie, thanks for calling. You're on.
Hi, Tom. How you doing?
Pretty well. What do you know?
Well, it's just my own experience. You know, I won't say my age, but I got let go by corporate America sometime in the last couple of years. And so I decided to pull out a skill that I have. And I'm a guitarist, and I found a site called Gigmasters, and where people bid on the services of musicians. They could say what they want and so on and so forth.
Yeah.
Submit a bid, and you get the gig or you don't. And, you know, you're not going to get rich doing that, but I've made a little money doing that. That combined with doing some teaching in the freelance economy. And
so what kind of gigs, Louie? Like, is it weddings or parties?
Yeah.
Or?
Well, it could be anything. I've done mostly through them. I've done, you know, as a soloist, wedding ceremonies and cocktail hours. You know, it's just kind of many musicians would refer to it as wine and cheese stuff. You know,
yeah. But, and what's the most what's the most you've made for one of those gigs? What's the most you've made? What's the least you've made, Louie?
Least I've made is about 150. Most I've made is 500, I think, roughly.
Okay, and so for you, that's welcome cash.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I you know, you got to keep some money coming in, body and soul together. You know,
you got to keep some money, body and soul. Absolutely. Thanks for calling, Louie. Let's go to Omaha, Nebraska, and David. David's calling, and let's get him on. Hi, David. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom. How are you?
Pretty well. What's your experience?
Well, I did work for a couple years for a company online called OnForce, doing technician work, computer repairs, printer repairs, TV repairs.
Okay.
And I was the highest rated technician in the Omaha area, and I had that I had some voice and made one dissenting opinion about a job and was kicked off the site for it.
In other words, there was something you didn't like about the way the job was being done or approached or something, you complained and that was it?
Yeah, basically.
So what does it leave you thinking about this world of, you know, online, you bid for the work, they were hooking you up with jobs, but now you're out. What do you think on balance?
Well, they made some good money. My top month was $8,000. But I had no power. I had less power than I would have had working a full-time corporate job, and they were very clear that you had no power. They said that there was an appeal process, which was completely opaque. There was no opportunity to give your voice in that appeal process, and it was frustrating, and I mean, I had other work I did on the side.
Yeah.
That was right when the recession hit, when that happened, and I found full-time work shortly after that, thankfully.
Boy, lucky for you, but I mean, when they were done with you, they just kind of flip a switch, and you're off, you're done, you're out. There's nothing to talk about.
No, nothing to talk about whatsoever. You have no, if you would go back and approach those people that were buying your services through them, you'd be violating your contract, and they'd have recourse against you, but you have no recourse against them.
David, I appreciate your call from Omaha. This is really interesting. Scott Kersner, Harley Shaken, stand by. I want to welcome into our conversation from Stanford, California, John Horton. He's an economist, staff economist, at one of the companies that does this kind of work or provides it. It's called Odesk. It's an online global marketplace, helps businesses hire and manage and pay remote freelancers or teams. Wrote his doctoral thesis at Harvard on online labor markets. John Horton, thanks very much for being with us.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for having me.
So you describe Odesk as kind of like an eBay for work. Bid for the work, and Odesk facilitates that whole transaction.
Yeah, that's basically it. I mean, I think one difference, and this has sort of come up throughout the program, that it's sort of this race to the bottom dynamic that the lowest bidder wins. And, you know, I think employers definitely are price sensitive, but you do see that they care about a lot of things. You know, they care about reputation, they care about quality. So you don't always see people just going with whoever bid the lowest.
Right. I mean, you wrote a thesis on this, and what conclusion did you come to about what impact this is likely to have on the shape of our economy, the shape of labor-employer relations? Where does this take us, John?
Well, I mean, I think like any academic, I'm kind of reluctant to make a lot of big predictions about the future. I think that there's a lot of things we just don't know about. I mean, in general, I think probably the most economically interesting thing about these markets is they facilitate this very extreme version of specialization. And you know, the history of labor economics has kind of been greater productivity through specialization. And now with these markets, I could potentially do some task that the total global demand is only 40 hours a week.
So it may be specialization, but I mean, some of them have people really hopping around with all kinds of jobs. I mean, I'm looking at TaskRabbit here. It's play with my kittens on Sunday, install a toilet seat, you know, hang 40 pictures in my apartment for 55, 60, 70 bucks, assemble an IKEA dresser. It's specialization, but there's also a lot of just anything and everything in here.
Yeah, no, I mean, you definitely see a lot of, I guess what you'd imagine is that I might become a person that specializes in playing with kittens, and you know, I can offer exceptional kitten playing services. So that's kind of what I mean by specialization.
Harley Shaken, you know, you mentioned the century in which we built up a lot of labor law to sort of bring some expectations about working conditions and more into this world. Now we've got a new world opening up before us, and you see how a lot of these transactions are going to be arrived at through these sites online. Do we need some new structures here to support humane, reasonable, decent standard of living within this world? Or should we just say, Wild West, let it go? This is what makes America great.
No, because actually the Wild West isn't what made America great historically, at least in the 20th century and going into the 21st. What made this country, this economy, so great is rapidly rising productivity, in which workers shared. So companies produced more, we had strong unions and effective regulation, workers earned more, and the flip side of that was purchasing power, economic growth, profitable companies, and workers in the middle class. That's really what we want to see in the 21st century as well. And while there are a lot of very positive things about these micro-labor sites, the room for abuse is very clear, and the danger is that micro-labor sites translate into micro-wage sites, and the flip side of that is micro-purchasing power. That's not healthy for the economy, and it creates something that goes well beyond the internet. We may be in the situation where labor standards more broadly in many industries are set on the net, where each worker is alone, where there are no benefits, no regulations, and that bleeds into the economy more generally. I don't think that's in anyone's interest going forward.
John Horton, what do you say to that kind of concern?
Well, I mean, I think that the kind of the big question is how much of the work that's being done in these markets is, someone had some traditional job and they've taken it and now moved it on online. That, you know, there's really some fixed amount of work that's going to be done. And the question is, where is it going to be done? I don't think that's the right characterization. I read a lot of these, when I look at these sites, a lot of the tasks that's being done are things that people either would have done themselves or just wouldn't have done at all. So I think you kind of have this shift. I think the other
In other words, now, and I see these in a lot like TaskRabbit or Zarly, I mean, it's as though I can suddenly have a butler or a whole lot of butlers. I mean, I can ask people to do any number of little services that in the past I might just not have had done, but now I will because I can put them up and see if it's cheap enough, and boom, I've got hands available.
I disagree with where John's going with this. I think there are a lot of tasks you see on these sites. You know, OnForce, one of the callers mentioned, you used to have an IT guy in your office, you know, who ran around fixing the computers and maintaining the servers and making sure your internet access was up. Now you can farm that job out. So that's a full-time job that that now can be outsourced easily. You also see websites where Skyward is one example, where maybe you hired a just out of college kid to write content for your blog or content for your website. Now you can farm that out through Skyward and pay $20 for every blog post to your company's blog. I do think that there are jobs that are that are vanishing here, and companies that are probably adding employees much slower because these sites exist.
John, are we going to disaggregate jobs here and turn them into tasks, into pieces, and put the pieces out for bid? Is that it?
Well, I think that certainly happens. I mean, there's definitely some of that goes on. But, I think the kind of the important empirical question is what you know, what fraction of it is that you're taking some traditional job and breaking it up, and how much of it is something that otherwise just wouldn't have been done? You know, so the example of like a company IT guy, well, a lot of small companies didn't have an IT guy, so they just did it themselves, or you know, just went without, or maybe they wouldn't even start a business because that wasn't a possibility. I mean, I think the other thing is, you know, if I have a traditional job and I'm able to take and split some pieces of it out and get people to help me, that can actually make me more productive. Mm-hmm. I mean, a lot of the jobs that you have, it's a mixture of sort of high value and low value activities for you. And, you know, generally, if you can become more productive, your employer actually wants, you know, more of your time or more time from someone else who's augmented like you. And I think, you know, the kind of the big question is, are online and offline workers substitutes or complements? And, you know, it's easy for to be imagine them also being complements, not just substitutes.
Complements that might bring a new lubricant to the economy, new activity. On the other hand, how do you avoid, you know, a whole lot of people being turned into kind of, you know, I snap my fingers and how cheaply will you do this job? And then there's the issue of the employers themselves, people, you know, paying to have this work done, and what recourse do they have? I don't know, if things go wrong. Let's go to Jim in Buffalo, New York. Jim, you're on the air.
Tom, thanks for taking my call. Mm-hmm. I had a number of concerns. What about child labor laws? And also, are there any restrictions on some sort of organized labor protest where, you know, they demand money up front and, you know, a couple minutes into the job, they just say, you know, this is cruel and unusual punishment, and they just, you know, bail on the job, you know, and, you know, it's their word against, you know, the employers.
So if you're employing here and they just bail out, what happens in that case, John Horton, with Odesk, let's say?
Well, I mean, I think all of these platforms have to invest a lot in coming up with some kind of infrastructure to deal with disputes and problems. I mean, that's kind of where they can offer a lot of value.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, one thing that is interesting about them is their incentives as a platform are very much two-sided. They're not really just in the side of either the employers or the workers. And, you know, all else being equal, because of the way they make money, they take a percentage of the wage bill. You know, they want to see wages rise. And so they invest a lot of time in trying to match the person who would be the best for the task, just because they could potentially make more money that way.
What about child labor? How do you know if somebody says, well, I'll look at brand names and see what resonates with me, you know, for 6 hours today? How do you know they're not 14 years old?
Yeah, I mean, every site tries to put terms of use in that say you can't do that. I mean, a lot of them, you know, to get paid, you have to have a bank account, you have to have a credit card.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but I mean, I think, you know, that's certainly a possibility.
You got to watch out for Lorraine in Arlington, Virginia. Lorraine, thanks. You're on the air.
Hello. I have some concerns. You know, I think of OSHA, the pre-OSHA days of the jungle, you know, Upton Sinclair's book. Can I have people bidding the lowest bid to come to my house and tear out the asbestos tile, you know, with to protect them from an unscrupulous job giver or an ignorant one? You know, maybe I don't know the tile in my basement is made out of asbestos.
Yeah, that's interesting. I mean, Scott, I saw one on one of these sites. There's a pile of sand that somebody once moved, and they put a photograph of a digital photo up there. And somebody who's thinking about bidding on it says, is there anything toxic or dangerous in that sand? And the person putting the job out for bids says, oh, no. But who's to say, Scott? Who keeps track of that kind of threat here?
Nobody, because this work is distributed globally, and it's essentially, I think, invisible today to regulators or, you know, NGOs or nonprofits that would want to monitor it. You know, Foxconn, the big electronics manufacturing company in China, has been in the news so much, but the benefit of Foxconn is there are factories that you could go and inspect and see what's going on there. A lot of this micro labor, someone might be typing in the data from a business card and they're getting 2 or 3 cents a business card. And that's a service that I really like. And I'm happy to have someone do that for 2 or 3 cents.
Mm-hmm.
But where is that person? How many hours a day are they working? Are they 14 years old? It's very, very hard to figure out.
Harley Shaken, where do you think this goes? How much of our labor market could migrate to this kind of world, this kind of relationship?
oh, I think we could see this become much, much larger, not simply in the United States, but globally. And it does present real dangers. You can see a book being written, The Bites of Wrath, in effect recreating many of the issues we had in the workplaces of the Depression, except in an internet age. It doesn't have to be this way, but it could certainly head in this direction, given the pressures that are out there. And one other thing, the context in the United States right now is we have a very weak, uncertain labor market. We have continued unemployment. We have a lot of workers who are marginal to the labor force, and that's a very vulnerable workforce without protection.
Well,
so I think we've got some issues here.
I have to say, it's interesting. My introduction was just two guys talking. They wanted some rough work done, and they were just marveling at how little people were willing to do it for. And there's a little window into a new world. On the other hand, you can get a lot of interesting work done, and as John Horton says, maybe lubricate the economy. John Horton with ODesk, we appreciate your being with us today. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Harley Shaken at UC Berkeley. Thank you very much, Harley.
Thank you.
And Scott Kersner, who's written about it for the Boston Globe in his Innovation Economy column. Thanks very much for joining us, Scott.
Thanks for paying me $1.25 to be here.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.
On Point is a production of WBUR Boston and NPR.